backbeat rock and roll. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey, Jessica.
Hi.
Hey, it's great to have you back on the DJM Cloud podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's episode number 25, and this is February 7th, 2012. So I think there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on that we could talk about.
Let's go!
And, you know that there was there was news making the rounds that Canon is doing fairly well selling DSLRs, but they're not selling that many. I guess their point and shoot sales are flat or down, and only growing in emerging markets. And so, you know, what do you think of that phenomenon?
All right,
I'm a Nikon fan, so if Nikon can swoop in and do better than Canon, then I'm all for it. No,
yeah.
I'm just kidding. I think more and more people want to take really nice quality pictures, and they're realizing instead of buying a smaller camera, which has reached mass saturation, a lot of those photographers that started out with that camera are now ready to move up. So it's just a shift in the market.
Yeah, I think that I guess a lot of people think they're taking good enough pictures with their iPhone or their Android phone, and so they're either going to just use that or maybe make a purchase on a premium camera like a DSLR. And I could definitely see that.
You'll drop that trap.
You know, you did mention Nikon. There's a new Nikon camera that's out there.
Yeah.
And it's they're talking about it being a full frame sensor camera and having about 36 megapixels. And you were saying you saw something about a submodel D800 and you were talking about the D800E.
Yeah.
And so yeah, these are very high res cameras. It seems like I really don't know Canon's line too well, and I'm not sure, but I think that this is probably aimed to compete with the very popular Canon 5D Mark II, whatever their current model is of that, and also, you know, that's the big trend is the full frame sensor. And I guess, you know, like we've done well it with the Nikon D5000, and they have the successor model D5100 out, but this is perched a few levels above that. But so I mean, I would have to think it looks like an excellent camera.
It does. It looks really big.
Okay, so it's gonna have a bigger size. Well, yeah, like the one we have. D5000 has a requirement for the lenses to have the autofocus motor in the lens. The bigger Nikons have the autofocus motor in the actual camera body also, and that allows older lenses to be used and, I guess, you know, some more flexibility. But it does add to the bulk, so it's definitely... that's probably the why that thing's bigger, and also the whole idea of having the full frame sensor design I think might keep it fairly bulky. So yeah, so not I mean I guess that would be fine to have a bigger size, but it really wouldn't be necessary.
Yeah, and I think you know, a lot of people are getting really caught up on, you know, 36 megapixels and, you know, $3,000 for the cost of the camera, but at the end of the day, you know, the equipment can only do so much, and as a photographer, you still always want to improve your framing and your picture taking and capturing those images, you know, and if you have, you know, a vision behind what you're photographing, then you'll capture it.
All right. Well, we'll see you right back here and after
That's
this short break.
Hey! Ow!
Rolling on dubs.
Well, what do you think of what's going on with? It is sort of a big question, but what's happening with the social networking companies that, you know, like seem both Twitter and Facebook seem to be intent on changing considerably what they're offering and what they're doing, you know, and it seems kind of strange what's going on. Like, for example, I feel like Twitter is becoming the new MySpace. It's just sort of a dumping ground. And there's just so many those kind of MySpace type people that are on it now.
Do you find those people mostly, though, in search or and on hashtags versus in your feed, or are you seeing that in your feed?
It's kind of the point now where I see people in my feed, like, retweeted, or I see people that I follow, and I look at their lists or the stuff they're tweeting about. You know, it's gotten to the point now where there's a lot of these type of users who I associate these types of users with posting their photos on lockers and often linking to Favestar.
Oh.
So that's a new service. I guess lockers is sort of the Instagram for Android users. But you know, if you look at that site, I think I've talked about it before. It's just it seems kind of strange and shady. And again, like lockers. If you know, Twitter has a lot of different users. A lot of people are using different clients and different different sites, different content that they're linking to. But I think that you start to see a lot of users using these types of sites that remind me of. Back in the MySpace days, people would have those, they would install third-party packages, often by just giving their MySpace credentials, and these would offer, say, like, they would offer to design their profile page, to their theme, whatever, but it would also sometimes, I'm not sure how well these services worked. I think over time they stopped allowing people to embed JavaScript and stuff, but they would say that they would offer you tracking services so that you could see who was visiting your profile, or they would certainly promise to offer that type of information. I was never, like, a very heavy MySpace user. It's just, you know, like, friends of mine from, you know, I went to college in the Midwest, and it was the mid-zeros, and so all my friends were on MySpace, but I never used one of those types of services like I'm talking about, but it seemed like people were interested in getting more information about their MySpace profile. And MySpace wasn't offering, you know, enough info to satisfy their interest. So they would go to these sites that would offer third-party information. And I think that type of thing is becoming... I think Favestar is that type of site. It's sorting out people's Twitter identity for them, and so much of this is based on crude popularity gaming mechanics, and it incentivizes people very heavily, so that it seems now that people, and again maybe this type of user more, but they're very common now. People are very interested in getting as much feedback as possible about their tweets. And if just looking at the info Twitter provides for them maybe doesn't offer them enough, they go to sites like Favestar and they try to get info about more info about their profile, because that's a really big deal to them. But also, I think what it does is you'll see people linking as their homepage on Twitter to their Favestar page, because I think that offers, as far as these users are concerned, a better front view to their Twitter identity, because Twitter profiles do just list the most recent tweets in order. On the other hand, the Favestar profile will emphasize the most retweeted tweets or things like that, most favorited. And so I guess it is called Favestar or whatever. And I think that it's something that you see the unfortunate phenomenon, in my opinion, of people crassly bending their behavior toward statistical popularity, where I think a lot of these people are failing to realize that their relatively modest number of followers is probably not a representative sample of what they hope their eventual target audience to be, and they're really just pandering to their current followers at the expense of really finding a formula to get really popular. I would argue that, and I would also argue there are people, you know, and there are people that just want to express themselves and want to say what they think and are a little bit less concerned about the popularity or instant feedback or instant approval that they're seeking. And it certainly seems like Twitter, to some extent, and these types of services like Favestar even more so, you know, they incentivize the behavior of just trying to pander to people.
I guess it's the internet, and there's that kind of stuff all over it, and eventually it starts seeping its way in the places, and Twitter was just an open breeding ground for that, simply with the fact that they're called followers.
Yeah, you know what, and it's true that feed burner widgets were popular in the mid-zeros on blogs to advertise how many RSS followers they had, or subscribers. I understand, like, MySpace would list how many friends people had. I'm just saying that, to me, that that seems to be, you know, I know that Twitter was originally colonized by tech nerds, and then it was swamped by the media world, by the celebrity world especially, and by the sports world, and those areas are much more popular than tech nerdism, and the people from those from those fields that are popular became popular on Twitter, and I think that's all fine. I think the media end of it may have had a distorting effect. Now, I don't know, but I think that if you consider how the media told people to go on Facebook and Twitter, go to their account, a show will say, go to our account on Facebook and Twitter, I have to assume that, especially in the case of Twitter, which is smaller than Facebook, many users were kind of brought into the fold of those services by being told about it by mainstream media. I think the best example of this is Oprah, but there's many smaller examples, even if they only drove a handful of people to the service. And so the primary original experience, many people's first experience of Twitter is reactive, not active, and it's based on communication to a specific, you know, recipient of the message, compared to broadcasting and expressing, you know, like more in the blogging tradition. And I guess, you know, there's a lot of people that kind of maybe came to you know, social media from blogging and still say, you know, use blogging tools to publish content, whether, you know, the term of art blogging is really, you know, relevant to what, you know, what's done. It's still, you know, I mean, I still think that like the, you know, the basic use of Twitter for people, I guess, is communicating, and that's fine. But I think that the thing about that is that what often a lot of people want to communicate in public fora is how popular they are. And so that just it becomes this very, very kind of closed loop instead of the kind of wide range of free expression that I think is, you know, is possible. Maybe with just slightly different app design.